This is a horrific situation, an absolutely horrific situation, and it shows the lure of this death cult to impressionable youngsters. And it's very, very important that we do everything we can to try to safeguard our young people against the lure of this shocking alien and extreme ideology.
That's the Prime Minister responding to Islamic State claims that Melbourne teenager Jake Bilardi was killed this week during a suicide bomb attack in Iraq. The government is still trying to verify that claim. Meanwhile, the Foreign Minister has revealed she cancelled his passport last October. However, she's refused to confirm reports that bomb-making chemicals were found at his former home and that the teenager may have been planning a terror attack in Melbourne. Earlier this week, the PM announced that the government would soon be launching an online program aimed at de-radicalising teenage jihadists. The Prime Minister says they've been brainwashed, but experts say that's just a simplistic view. Joining me now is Dr. Clark Jones, a visiting fellow at the ANU who works with terrorist offenders in the Philippines and in Indonesia. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
I'm really well. Our Prime Minister says they're brainwashed. London's Lord Mayor Boris Johnson says they're young men lacking self-esteem who don't have a particular mission in life, who feel they're losers and jihad makes them feel strong, like they're winners. Who's right?
Look, I don't think there's any right or wrong in this answer. I think brainwashing is the wrong terminology, that's for sure. With a whole range of individuals and Jake Bilardi is not a typical profile. I mean, we tend to see kids from marginalised minority groups in Australia, disenfranchised kids from low social economic areas. But Jake Bilardi, it comes from a middle class family, a relatively stable family. He had six or five other siblings. He did lose his mother when he was young in life, but we're seeing a whole range of profiles, and I think we need to be careful not to say it's either or. Some of them are poor, misguided, uneducated, you call them idiots, whatever you want to call them, but let's not throw them all into the one case. I think there's a range of profiles and we need to be conscious of that.
But that's part of the problem, isn't it? When there's a range of profiles, it makes it even more difficult for law enforcement to deal with it. There's not a typical jihadist. There's different people who have emerged who've been really seduced by this ideology. So how do you tackle it as on the law enforcement level, on the legal level, as a government? What is the response that works?
Again, we need a whole range of responses. Responses. We need the hard edge responses. So we need the police responses. We need to act when there is a potential threat. But we also need the softer responses, and then that's sort of the terminology people are using. And that involves intervention at a number of different levels. So firstly, we need to understand why these young kids understand the range of types of people that are involved, and then on a case-by-case basis, a case management system or even a clinical approach, we need to look at how we would design an intervention program to suit that particular individual. Intervention programs, or what you mentioned, de-radicalisation programs, there's the school's out in relation to the success of those, but I think if our aims are to bring about behavioural change so they don't want to act out in violence, I think that should be our goal. But to try and bring ideological shift or ideological change, I think we're hard up against it. But
how does this all explain the number of young women being radicalised? There's increasing numbers of young women also being radicalised in this what the Prime Minister calls this death cult.
The death cult. I don't particularly refer to it as a death cult, but
I said the Prime Minister refers. attributed.
Yeah, look, it certainly does attract females. We tend to concentrate on the male dynamics of this, but yeah, certainly women are lured over for the chance of a partner to support their male counterparts overseas. There's a range of reasons, but a lot of them end up in very difficult situations, either in the sex slave or unfortunately raped. It's not a pretty ending for some of these people, but it's not a pretty ending for some of the males as well. We saw with Jake Bilotti, he was probably groomed into a suicide type role, a martyrdom type position, because of his profile and his, if I can say, weak nature. He's had trouble in maybe within his school. I believe he was bullied at school, and probably had difficulty within his family, struggling with five other brothers.
If I can interrupt, the BBC journalist who had a written contract with the Melbourne teenager, Jake Bilotti, says his blog reinforces to him that Jake was an intelligent, articulate and politically engaged person. He was troubled. We hear the word intelligent often being used to describe men who've gone over to fight with IS. Are they intelligent? What does that mean, and why are they being described in these ways?
It's the same of any group of society. You're going to have those that are very educated. I've talked to offenders. One particular one had a master's in engineering. So yeah, there's a whole range of educational backgrounds. And Jake certainly, I read his blog. It was well written. It was very intellectual. He obviously had a high IQ. But that doesn't mean there are others with lesser IQs. And Khalid Sharouf, for example, was more of a thug, more of a crook. I suggest that he wasn't very well educated. So we can't just focus on one particular individual, and that's what we tend to do. These people come to our attention, whether through a plot disrupted or whether they've travelled overseas, and we're seeing, as we go along, and we're going to see many more, we're going to see different types of offenders, and therefore, when we're going to get involved in intervention, they also need to be equally as tailored to match the reasons for their pathway to radicalisation in the first place.
So these online de-radicalisation scheme that the government wants to launch, does it have any potential to work in the last minute we have here?
Well, let's take away from let's not say de-radicalisation, but certainly we need to create intervention, a counter narrative on some of these social media sites to detract from the Islamic State, and also to, in a sense, make Australia a nicer place to be, a place to want to be, rather than having to travel. Look, it's one of many strategies. The social media, yes, we need to focus on that, but we also need to focus on why these people are seeking out alternative attachments through social media. We're still not addressing the root causes, and we're still not getting down to really understanding what the problem is in Australia. And I think we need, there's a lot more work that needs to be done in this space.
Thank you so much for your time. That's Dr. Clark Jones, a visiting fellow at the ANU who works with terrorist offenders in the Philippines and in Indonesia.